we're joined by Rich Waltz. And Rich, of course, the Bay Area native, and he is a TV voice of the Miami Marlins. I love saying the word Miami Marlins because that's how I knew him.
Yep.
And a couple of days ago, it was the birthday of Satchel Paige, the great Satchel Paige, who, believe it or not, I saw pitch in Miami for the Miami Marlins.
Wow. How'd he do? Do you remember the details?
He came in by helicopter.
No.
Yes, he did. They brought him in by helicopter. And the first year of the Marlins, I think it was 56, they actually played in the Orange Bowl one game. And they had 70,000 people in the Orange Bowl. And, of course, it was a crazy configuration. But every Sunday, doubleheaders, I was there, Miami Marlins.
God bless you, because it's, as you know, growing up in Miami, the Marlins had a throwback, I want to say 4 years ago in Milwaukee, and they wore those uniforms from the mid-50s with the little fish with a bat on his shoulder. And that's when I was first aware that Satchel Paige actually pitched for the Marlins.
I saw it.
Way to go.
I saw it. George Zuvarinka. And we loved the Marlins. We loved him. Of course, it was Bobby Maduro Stadium back then.
Yes.
It was Jose Aliman was the one who constructed it. And blah, blah, blah. But all that stuff. It had a big Cuban connection even then for the stadium. But we loved going. And they were the Phillies farm club. And then they became the Orioles. But we take the L bus up 79th Street and then take a bus across to 12th and 14th Street and 12th Avenue, and there we've been.
Very nice. Well, it's changed a little.
A little bit. My law office was 4854 Northwest 7th Avenue, which wasn't too far from there.
I steer clear of that.
I know. That was our shell city. Oh, yeah. I'm digressing to Miami, but it's fun. Hey, great to have you here as always. It's great to have you. But you've got a big weekend going on in Miami right now. Tell us what's going on in South Florida.
Well, look, it's the All-Star Week. Giants fans had it, what was it, 2004, 2003? Something.
Seven, right?
Seven?
Seven.
I remember was Ichiro hit an inside
that's
the park
right. That's right.
Home
yeah.
run. So Fan Fest has opened up. It's going on for 5 days. Tomorrow is the Futures game and the Celebrity and All-Star softball game. On Monday, it's the workout and the home run derby. Tuesday is the red carpet parade. And then they finally play the All-Star game on Tuesday night. So it's there's a lot of excitement down there for a franchise and a fan base that has had its share of disappointments over the last few years in on the field and off the field. The All-Star game is good stuff.
Will you go and participate? Do you have anything to do?
I do. Look, we won't land back in Miami till 3 or 4 in the morning after playing an afternoon game here
what
in San Francisco.
What a trip you're on, my God.
Yes, it's just to St. Louis to, actually Milwaukee-St. Louis to here. But I'm hosting the commissioner's town hall meeting.
Ah, that's cool.
Very good.
At Fan Fest, I believe it's 2 o'clock.
Monday.
It's on MLB and MLB.com.
Okay.
I have a field dedication to go to, and then I'm actually going to go to the game just to watch as a fan.
Very good. Very good.
That's
and
awesome.
The gala is exciting.
There'll be some other functions that I'll attend, too.
Yeah.
I'll be attending those as a fan, too.
When I went to the World Series in Miami in 2003,
right.
It was the most shrimp I'd ever seen, ever. It's like they called the ocean and said, send in 10 million shrimp. I mean, baseball doesn't fool around where they have these galas and
no,
all
and that's
that
a great city for a party. A lot of the Fan Fest and activities are on South Beach or in the downtown area. So that's a great scene even without the All-Star game.
Oh, beautiful. Rich Wallace with us. Go ahead, Ben.
I'd imagine the players love going down there for this little excursion. What do they got? What do the Marlins got planned for that club in left field?
Oh, the Clevelander.
Yeah.
Well, the Clevelander is lit every night anyway,
okay.
So I would expect for the All-Star game. That would be a great place to sit for the home run derby in my estimation.
Oh, yeah.
Because the balls, unless it gets up on that ledge, are going to go over the fence and either into the pool of the Clevelander or into the Clevelander. If you've ever been, and now I know when Marty wasn't practicing law, he spent many nights at the Clevelander nightclub on South Beach, which is a mix of a hotel, a pool, a bar, a club, dancing, all of that in one, and yeah. it's an iconic place, and they opened up the bar and the pool in left field in Marlins Park.
Wow, that's crazy. I bet you it's going to go off on Tuesday night.
Yeah, this gonna be, yeah, I hadn't thought about that. I hadn't thought that the
Monday
excitement.
Night, too, as Rich says, Monday night,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, the home run derby. All right, let's talk about the Marlins a little bit, because indirectly, maybe the Giants are in the mix for this thing, and the big question is, new ownership is coming. Do you get rid of your stars? Do you keep the stars so the new owners get a team that's ready to go? What do you do, and what's your thought about it?
Nobody knows. I mean, that's a great question. I think for players, for managers and coaches, employees, for broadcasters, we know just about as much as we read. In this day and age with Twitter and the Internet, word passes pretty quickly. The reporters, the Haymans and the Rosenthals all have better sources than obviously I do. So I read just what everybody else reads, and it's a real interesting divergence of sell the team, buy the team, all-star game, and then what do you do with a team that right now is not on the upside of 500. The hard part, I think, when you evaluate this ball club is that if this team, and this is an opinion that I have, but it's shared by a lot of people around the game that have told me, if this team had two frontline starting pitchers, they would be over 500 and they would be a contending team. And that's, look, I'm sure there's other teams around baseball that can say the same thing. But it speaks to what's in the lineup 1-8. And 1-8, this is a really good team. I think you saw a little bit of that last night when they jumped Matt Moore early. Even though has struggled somewhat this year, it's a really good 1-8. What it's lacking is, even though Dan Straley was terrific last night, they need like three more Dan Straleys.
Yeah.
They need two more Edinson Volquez.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the death of Jose Fernandez at the end of the season last year, you just can't go out and find that. And it's not a team right now that has the resources or had the resources in the offseason to go out and find that through free agency. It doesn't have the farm system that you can, send three or four prospects to get a number one starter. So that here they sit, and they're not sure who's going to own them by the end of the month. And baseball, I think, is mulling over what do they do here? Do they let the current ownership make those trades? The potential owners, would they want to make those trades? Would they want to have their hand in whether they rebuild, reload, maybe trade a few pieces? Which pieces do they feel will be the future if there is indeed a new owner by the time we get to the end of July? It's really an interesting predicament. And, I talked to Don Mattingly about this yesterday. And I asked him, I said, how do you handle this as a manager? He went through this similar scenario in Los Angeles. How does your team handle this? And he echoed much of what I've preached and tried to do, in that you can't control what you can't control. And as a player, as a manager, as a broadcaster, every day you have to show up and you have to call the game, you have to manage the game, you have to play the game. And it doesn't matter who owns the team. It doesn't matter who's going to buy the team. You still have to show up and play, and it's easy to say and hard to do for players, especially. It's easy for me. It's harder for players, but that's kind of the attitude they've tried to take in the clubhouse.
Okay.
Well, when Wayne Huizenga sold the team to Jeffrey Loria, he stripped the team down.
Yep.
Well, it was you're skipping John Henry in that timeline. Huizenga won the World Series in '97. Could not get a new stadium. Decided to unload the team, and what he did was essentially, with Dave Dombrowski as the GM, started the next World Championship team. A lot of those guys that were on the 2003 team came over in a 98 or a 99 trade. So
Rob Nen came this way.
Yes, we had Rob Nen on. We're down and out. What a good guy and what a warrior, not only for the Marlins but also for the Giants. A guy that gave you everything, toe tap and everything. He was on with us down in Anaheim, in Dodger Stadium, when we were in Dodger Stadium about 2 months ago.
Well, great. Rich Walsh with us. Rich, always nice to get your opinions on what's going on around Miami and around baseball itself. So you're going to emcee or hold the conference with Rob Manfred Monday. That is going to be very, very interesting.
Yeah, it's the tradition for this commissioner.
But they're going to get on him.
And he takes questions by email. He takes live questions, and I'll be able to moderate and give some questions as well. I will say this, having listened to him speak at the Fox Baseball Seminar, and I did the World Baseball Classic in Japan. He was over in Japan, had a chance to visit with them over there. He's very candid, and he is not adverse to trying change. He is not one of those guys that says, well, this game has survived for 90 years doing it this way. Let's keep doing it this way. He's very progressive. He's very open to ideas. And I think if he didn't have to collectively bargain many things, there would be a lot more change in baseball. There would be others. But I'm interested just to hear him, because when I've heard him in those other settings, very progressive, very much interested in ideas. So I'm looking forward to it.
Other than just the time of the game, which all of baseball is obsessed with, what are some of the other topics that you anticipate talking about?
Well, I think in Miami, certainly the sale of the team will be a topic. I think, other stuff in baseball, September rosters to me is okay. Something that I think needs to be fixed. I'm a little disappointed that it wasn't fixed. The commissioner did say this spring that, there were some things in the collective bargaining agreement that didn't happen, but that doesn't mean they won't happen before the next one, because, instant replay, the collision rule, second base rule, all of those things were implemented without an actual bargaining agreement, but by bargaining during the course of and during that current agreement. So, time of game, I think for the commissioner, one of the big things is access to the game of baseball for minorities. And whether it's an inner city kid or a kid in middle America, baseball is becoming an elite sport in terms of finances. If you go down to the younger levels, the showcases cost money, the travel teams cost money. I was a college shortstop. Colleges only have 11 and a half, 12 scholarships to give. If you don't come from money or have some resources, college baseball is not a great option for you. And I think the commissioner has voiced that concern. And look, if I'm a 15, 16-year-old kid and I play multiple sports like a Giancarlo Stanton did, I'm not thinking about college baseball. Andrew McCutchen wrote a great article probably 2 years ago on the Players Tribune about the only reason he chose baseball. He's a football player in Central Florida. He broke his ankle or had a severe leg injury in football. And then all of a sudden, baseball presented an opportunity. He was a high draft pick, and he decided, I'm going for it. But I think that's another avenue that the commissioner is interested in, is opening it up and breaking down some of those financial hurdles.
Boy, interesting. You're going to have an interesting conversation, because I agree with that they want to reach out to minorities and all that, but they also want to make baseball cool.
Yes.
That's the deal.
And he's okay. You know what?
That's
he's okay with bat flips. He's some of these unwritten rules he would like to exercise from the game. That was, I think, one of the real eye-opening moments of the World Baseball Classic, was that passion that was felt in Miami, that was felt in Japan, that was felt at Dodger Stadium. I think a lot of people feel that's good for baseball. I think if you're a 16, 17-year-old player and you want to express emotion, you can do it playing football. You can do it playing basketball to some extent.
Yeah.
But in baseball, for some reason, there's this, you have to play the game the right way. Well, what's the right way? If you go down to the Dominican, you go down to Puerto Rico, you go to Korea and watch the bat flips, what's the right way?
No, absolutely. It's going to be interesting to see how they deal with that. But that's going to be one of the subjects.
Who's your pick in the home run derby? I'm just starting that question.
What about the local guy? He would be the obvious choice, right? We were talking about this earlier with Paul White, formerly of USA Today, and he picked Aaron Judge. But I feel like your first home run derby, you're probably going to expend all your resources in the first round.
Well, look, the thing that was impressive about Stanton last year is he went in with a game plan. And the game plan was stay in your swing and don't get long. And if you watched last year at 61 home runs, he was short to the ball. He had relaxed hands, and the ball just jumped off his bat. And in talking to guys that have done it, it's on a clock. So it's no longer that. It's a lot faster, but guys just get tired. Guys get fatigued.
Yeah. Who pitched to him?
Well, that's a good story. Pat Schein, a Bay Area guy, a Gonzaga Bulldog, Pat Schein was the Marlins replay coach last year, left the team to go do something else in baseball, and all of a sudden became available. So he's pitching to Stanton again this year.
Okay. Now that's the deal.
And that's a good thing. Now, you know, the other guy that I can tell you about, and no one's paying attention to him, and that's Justin Bour, because he's up against Judge in the first round. But Bour has won a couple of these home run derbies in the minor leagues. Mm-hmm. He has a very short and uncomplicated swing, and the right field porch in Marlins Park, while it's not short like Yankee Stadium, it is shorter than left field. Not that that matters with Aaron Judge, but that's just a scatter report on Bour.
Okay, all the right. Long money with Justin Bour.
Very good. Okay, very good. Hey, great to see you, as always, and we love having you out here, and you really have a knack for getting right to the issue of baseball.
I appreciate it.
You got a bottle of wine.
I appreciate the bottle of wine. It's the second best thing to coming on the Marty Lurie show here at the, where is the Chop House? What is
the,
this?
The Public House.
The Public House, sorry.
Yeah, oh, it used to be the Chop House many years ago,
You know, when I was bopping around these parts, I guess that's what I remember.
Hey, Rich, let me ask you one more thing. They just concluded the Barry Bonds ceremony where they put a plaque up on the Wall of Fame.
Yep.
And you enjoyed his presence last year.
I
know things didn't end quite harmoniously between him and Don Mattingly, but maybe share some of your memories of having Barry around the team.
Well, I don't think it was adversarial, and I don't think it ended, you know, horribly. I think it was just a difference of opinion. I really enjoyed having Barry around for 7 months, not only in spring training, but throughout the game. As a broadcaster, your best information comes from players, and it comes from coaches and managers. And Barry was terrific to stand behind the cage and talk hitting with. He was terrific with us on television. We probably had him on live during a game from the dugout on headset 4 times during the season.
Really?
And he was terrific. His baseball IQ is as high as anybody you've ever run into. He was open with it. I think he had a positive effect on some hitters in the Marlins lineup as well. I think he has friends in that clubhouse. I don't think that's an adversarial situation at all. I think he's welcome to walk in and say hello to everybody. They would welcome that. And I think a few of them have already said hello to him.
Boy, very nice. Okay. Well, the sisters love you. The twins love
you. That's
right. Renee and Marilyn, I always appreciate you saying hello to them. And they listen every game.
Well, make sure they get one of those Nielsen diaries. And then fill out the
They have the whole building listening to you. So don't worry. And Aventura. You're big in Aventura.
That's if you're going to be big somewhere,
Aventura is where you want to be big.
And they're going to be up at 10 o'clock tonight watching the first pitch?
Oh, absolutely. And then they'll tape it. And they don't miss a game. I'm telling you, they do not miss a game.
That's great.
They're Marty's sisters, so they're dialed in.
They're listening to this. They're listening today to this. All right. Hey, great to see you, Rich. Thank you so much.
Rich. Thank you for the invite,
have
guys.
Have a good week.
And you've got FP Jr. here.
Got FP Jr.
I thought that was it. I walked in, I'm looking at him, I'm going, that looks like FP 20 years ago. And it is.
Yeah. He can hit.
He can hit.
He can hit. I've seen him play.
That's more than his dad can say, right?
His dad was a tough player.
Fighting fighter. Yeah. What was it, Marty? The fighting fire hydrant?
The fighting hydrant.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, fighting hydrant.
Buffed and all that.
All right, great. Thanks, Rich.
All right, thank you, guys.
More coming up, KMBR 680, the Sports League.